Hey, what's up? Hello. Welcome to Sounds Fake But Okay, a podcast where an arrow ace girl. I'm Sarah. That's me.
And a demi straight girl. That's me, Kayla.
And arrow ace guy. That's me, David J.
Talk about all things to do with love, relationships, sexuality, and pretty much anything else we just don't understand.
On today's episode, ace parenting.
Sounds fake, but okay. Welcome back to the pod.
Monsters, Inc.
Oh, okay. Good. All right.
Moving on. It's a bit we do at the beginning of every show, and then we have a guest on, and then I get embarrassed about my stupid bit I started like a year ago. So I'm sorry.
No, y'all look cool. You have like an empire now. You don't have to apologize for anything. You have like a sound check, but okay, Death Star is my understanding. So be yourself.
They do call themselves a mob. They call themselves the Fellowship of the Mob at this point.
Oh, the mob.
I think is the mob.
They're the Fellowship of the Mob. Okay.
Yeah. Good. So, yeah. Excellent.
See, that's not scary.
Yeah, no, it's not threatening at all.
Oh, man. On that note, wow. Okay. Kayla, what are we talking about this week? Who do we have with us?
Well, yeah, obviously we have a third person with us this week, and it is the amazing David J. finally on the show.
Hey.
Hello.
Excited to be here.
I finally made it.
Excited to have you here.
Yeah, I feel like we've been wanting to have you on for forever, and it's finally happening. We're very excited.
Indeed. Ooh. For any of our listeners who might live under a rock or maybe are just new to the community, can you give like a brief intro of who you are, David?
Sure. So I am the founder of AVEN, asexuality.org, which I started when I was 18 after like spending my whole high school trying to come to terms with my own ace identity and really at that point asexual identity because the word ace didn't exist yet. And like really wanted to talk to other people like me. And so I started the site, back when the only other thing that was around was the Haven for the Human and Me, but I actually started before I knew that existed too, to try to find other asexual people and like create a space for us to figure ourselves out. And then many things have happened since then. I currently am on the board of Haven. I still do some amount of ace visibility stuff. Though a lot of what I do is just like try to support folks who are kind of, I think, more out in the front of organizing now. And yeah, but have been a fan of you all for a long time and I'm excited to be on the podcast.
Oh, thank you. When you suddenly joined our live stream last year, me and Kayla were both like, it's David J.
We were both like fangirling so hard and we're like, because I think before that live stream, I don't think we saw ourselves as like any type of like players in the activism kind of scene or anything. Like we didn't see ourselves as like a big deal. And then we were like, David J knows who we are. And then now it's like, oh yeah, we know David J. Like that's normal, right? Like, I don't know. It's just very... It's so weird.
We were just freaking out, but also live at the same time. And it was just...
I was biking with my daughter to take her to the beach.
Yeah, yeah, I remember you were like streaming from the beach, yeah.
And so I was like trying to... and listening to this live stream, and I was so into it. And I was like, how could I participate? So I was like trying to like keep her from drowning and at the same time be like, hey, what's up?
You know, just parenting things.
Just parenting things. Yeah, well, exactly. I guess that's as good a segue as ever. I actually thought of a really excellent, when I say really excellent, I mean really bad segue earlier, and I'm going to say it. Kids at home, some of you may know David J. as the father of modern asexuality. You know what he's also the father of? A child.
A child.
Octavia House Father J. Kent.
Amazing. Kayla, do you want to start us out? You kind of started these questions before I popped in and added to them, so.
Yeah, we just kind of wrote out some talking points so that we could keep ourselves on track, because for those of you who listen, you know, things are never on track here. Let's see, where do I want to start? I guess, where do I want to start? I mean, I think this is just kind of like, I know like our listeners have requested that we talk to people about this, because I think from the outside, being asexual and being a parent is kind of, people see it as a juxtaposition, right? Because people are like, oh, well, to have a kid, you have to have sex. And if you're asexual, you must hate sex, which, you know, like all of those things are untrue. So was that kind of a struggle for you personally, I guess? Like, first of all, I guess, did you always know you wanted to be a father? And then second of all, when you also realized you were asexual, was that something you kind of had to grapple with, I guess?
Yes. I will also, this is a deeply soft preference. I'm like, think of myself as more of a parent than a father, little bit. I don't not think of myself as a father. But part of what's fun, and I'll get to this, about the free parent thing, is like I get to occupy this like less gendered role, which is fun.
I'll get to that later. Yeah, I didn't even think about that. That's really
sounds
cool.
Fun.
But I mean, parenting has sort of always been my A row long game. So like, okay, I'm the oldest of three siblings in my nuclear family. I'm the oldest of 12 cousins on my mom's side, and I'm the third oldest of 24 cousins on my dad's side.
Oh my God.
So like, many. I had a lot of children around me growing up all the time. And like I was surrounded by kids and I loved it. Like, I just got such energy from being around, like when I was a teenager, from like having kids at every age beneath me. And when I graduated college and I like started doing worky things and was suddenly in this world where I only hung out with people in their 20s, I felt that absence. And so I remember being on the BART train going home from my first job in San Francisco in like 2005 and seeing this ad for queer adoption. There was like two dads and like a baby that they just adopted on the boat. And I was like, I almost broke down. I was like, that's what I want. So I knew it, like I've known it because of how important kids have been to me. And then the struggle was never the biology of it. Cause I was like, there's so many ways to like have a child in one's life legally or otherwise. Like that part I'm not worried about. The part that was really challenging for me was the commitment part. I was like, if I can avoid it, I don't want to parent alone. Not because that's not a great experience for many, many people, but because like, it's a lot. Like if I can have support, if I can have people doing it with me, like I think I'm going to be a much better parent. I think I'm going to be a lot happier and a lot more balanced. And, not to like, say anything against folks who are parent in a way that's single by choice. But like, for me, I knew I wanted that path. And I, at that point, was like figuring out my A-row self. And I was like, okay, all my friends can date and very little, like the expectation of sexuality doesn't feel right to me. The like romantic language and sort of scriptiness of it, like doesn't feel like how I feel in intimate relationships. So how do I have relationships that get taken seriously enough that one day I could wind up parenting with people? And that was a lot of my motivation to start figuring out how to like do deep commitments with people, like figuring out how to go on long walks with people, introduce intentionality into our relationships. I started doing that with a bunch of people. I started doing that with couples. There's actually one couple that we were talking about co-parenting together, and there's a moment in the documentary Asexual where there's someone who's like, oh, we want to have babies and we want Dave to be part of that. Like that was that first couple, and that didn't wind up working out, which, you know, I expected it might not. We were pretty far from having kids at that point. But in another one of my relationships where like we really built, spent a bunch of time building trust, it did wind up becoming possible, which was amazing. So I'll pause on that part of the story because I'm guessing we'll get to it. But like the answer is like, yeah, it was really hard to imagine because I had a really hard time imagining like, how do I build commitments that are that strong? And like that was the struggle.
Yeah, I think that gets into a lot of just other aspects of the A-spec community is those relationships that are outside of romance and sex. Like when people talk about QPRs, or we just kind of talk about how I see kind of like asexual and aromantic culture as being very friendship-based and really caring about those platonic relationships. And I think those kind of like what you're talking about, it kind of works together with having to have, like you're saying, that intention in relationships, really caring about relationships that aren't deemed most important because they're romantic or whatever society mm-hmm. says, and kind of breaking those things down in order to get, you know, the things you want, which was in your case, you know, the ability to be a parent.
Yeah. Yeah. And like, there's a lot in life that just takes a lot of trust. And it takes people who are used to doing really hard things together and used to like know how to make really, really serious promises together. And I think it's like one of the missions that my like ACE experience in life has put me on is just like helping more people to do that outside of romantic scripts. Because like romantic scripts are great for romantic people, they're beautiful, but they shouldn't be the only way or one of the only ways to make promises that are that serious.
Right. And I feel like too, I mean, there are so many people who have children when they don't have that level of trust with each other, or you know, like the accident kids, or you know, whatever. And it's like, you, I think it's good that you're like going into it being like, I intentionally want to build this trust, I want to intentionally build these relationships so that I can be a good parent, so that I can create this good little world for my child. And you know, I think other people who might look at that as a little bit strange, it's like, well, but you know, it's
probably
good.
What we should all be doing.
Yeah.
I feel like anyone who has a child should probably be putting in, you know, as much effort as they can.
Well, yeah, yes, and I don't want to tell other people how to parent. Like one thing unrelated to our conversation today about being a parent is like you learn how there's this multi-billion-dollar parental shame industry that like takes over social media and bookstores and everything, and it is important to avoid that. But like, yeah, I think intentionality is good. Like it's a good thing to know how to wield. And like I, you know, not surprisingly, like I chose a family where like that's our jam, and we're like, we get to spend a whole week out whiteboarding about our feelings. Like, let's do it. And that's not for everyone for very legit reasons, yeah. But it is for us. And so that's been helpful.
Yeah.
Yeah. I can't imagine Sarah whiteboarding her feelings. I remember in an early episode of the podcast, we had watched your TED Talk, and you had one of your, I don't know if you've done multiple, one of your TED Talks.
The one that wasn't talking a TED about, Talk, but it's a TED Talk.
Yeah. That one.
And you were talking about the exercise of like sitting down with your friend and like talking about like basically like defining your relationship with your friend. And I had asked Sarah in that very early episode if she would do that with me jokingly. And she was like, no, because that is not Sarah's situation. So,
well, y'all aren't having any babies.
That's true. Just a book baby.
Just a book baby. It's actually really interesting that we have this discussion today, because earlier today I was at a virtual baby shower, and they were, you know, it's the first of my cousins to have a child in a long time. My one cousin has a daughter who's like 16, but you know, like the first kind of a new generation of children of my cousins. So like there haven't been kids around for a while in my family. And so they were just like talking about like, oh, like here are all the things that like no one ever tells you that's like not so rosy about parenting that you need to be prepared for. And they were just telling all these stories, and I was sitting there like, this I could never. Like, I respect parents so much. It's not for me.
I can't wait until, because Sarah also has a fear of baby bellies. Sarah is very disturbed by just the visage of a large belly with a baby in it. So the day, I was actually for some reason thinking about, I think I was watching a TV show where someone like called their best friend to tell them they were pregnant. And I was like, I'm pretty sure when I tell Sarah I'm pregnant, she's going to be like, don't see me for the next year. I don't want to see your stomach. I will not be there. I'm happy for you, but please leave.
My sister recently got a puppy, and I was like, I was so excited, and I was like, I'm just gonna warn you, like, I'm gonna be way more excited about this puppy than when you have kids. And she was like, no, I understand.
See, I can respect this because I'm the opposite. Like, so my co-parents have cats, and they're like totally cat people, and like they know these cats, and they have like great relationships with them. And I just for some reason do not emotionally resonate with cats. I'm like, you're great, you're here, I get you need food, and like I'll give you food. I'm not like out to be cool to you, but like I like you walk in the room and like I don't like have a reaction in a way that if any child walks in a room, I'm like my whole world is their world instantly. And I understand and respect that people are the opposite. This is one thing that has becoming a parent has taught me is like how much I'm a parent because I like that's who I am and how I'm wired, and like it is not for everybody. It's like there should not be an imperative. Like I think there's way too much shaming of folks who don't want to be parents, and that's also like, yeah, silly.
Also, I was going to say, just a reminder to our listeners, we have two Arroways people who have very different stances on what they want for their lives in terms of children. Just note that. It's, you know, there's a wide range, folks.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, we always say on the show, like, me and Sarah's experience of our, like, A-spec-ness does not go for everyone. And that's obviously very true here. You have two people with, like, the same broad identity who feel very differently about children. What was I gonna say?
I'm gonna be the coolest aunt. And that's see, where it's gonna be.
See, this is the thing. Like, so the question for me is not like, do you want kids? It's how do you want kids in your life? Mm-hmm. And like, the answer could be not at all. And the answer could be like, I want to hang out with a kid once a month, and like, I want that kid to know who I am. And
I feel like that's how, like, Sarah's gonna be.
Yeah, like that's legit.
Yeah. Because my first job was coaching gymnastics, so I was dealing with kids, and like I've been told that I'm good with kids. It's just after about an hour, I'm like, okay, I'm done. Like, I'm like, I can spend some time with you. If the kids related to me, I could probably handle more than an hour. But like, it's just after a while, I'm like, okay, I've had my fill of children. Moving on. Anyway,
I mean, and this is I think that is I don't want to wax too poetical about parenting, but like one of the things that one of the people in our little like community of queer non-traditional families talked about is they said, you know, it's not that parenting is hard, it's that it's unrelenting. Like, there's parts of it that are hard, there's parts of it that are gross, there's parts of it that are anything else. It's the like, yeah. Like, you have got to be keeping this person safe and entertained, like, for the next 48 hours. And you don't get a break from that. And I think that's part of why even just moving from two parents to three parents for us makes such a big difference. Because I, so much more of my parenting time is, like, that first 2 to 3 hours when I'm most in it. Mm-hmm. And then I get to go do something else and, like, refresh and then come back for those most in it 2 to 3 hours. And so many people I know who are parents who are like, they're like on hour 15 a lot of the time. Mm-hmm. It's just a really different place.
Yeah. People who are single parents or stay-at-home parents, like you're dedicating your entire life, like sun up to sun down, and then also in the middle of the night when your kid wakes up screaming, like to this child. And like, it's wonderful, but also it's hard. It's not an easy task.
Something that I've been thinking about a lot too as I get older is that, like, my parents are also still parents. Like, mm-hmm. last year when I first graduated college, I went off on my own for the first time, and I was having, like, the worst anxiety of my life. I was, like, vomiting every day before work, and every day I was on the phone with my parents having them to, like, talk me down. And I was like, these poor people, not that they, like, weren't happy to do it, they're lovely people, but I was like, these poor people have been parenting me for like 23 years and it's still not over. Like, these poor people, until they're like very old and it's my turn to take care of them, like, oh my God, they don't get a break ever.
Well, and like, that's another thing too, that like, I, when people are like, oh, are you sure you don't want kids? I'm like, yeah, I'm sure. Because I feel like a lot of times people, when they think about kids, they think about like having a cute little four-year-old, or like they think about like just the stuff that's like Instagrammable, and like it's like, no, like you have, you're taking care of this human person at least until they're 18, if you're a good person longer than that. And so like it's a lifetime commitment, and it's something that not all people are willing or should have to make if they don't want to.
Completely. And just to return to the topic of how different we are, that like that thought was sort of the deal closer for me, where I was like, I know I love to have kids around, like it's good energy, but I looked at my parents now, and like my siblings and I have a great relationship with our parents, and I look at their life where they're like, oh, we're like, we're hanging out, we're sort of doing the things we like to do, and then we have these people who are really close to, who are like out doing new interesting things in the world that we can like support a little bit and stay in touch with. And like, I try to imagine myself being in my 60s and 70s without kids. And I was just like, I can't imagine myself being that age and being happy without like someone in a generation below me that I feel really connected to. And that's like, yeah, that's a me statement. That's not an everyone right. statement, but that was the thing where I was like, oh, that's how I absolutely know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, that's good, though, that like you were so sure about it. I'm just sure in the opposite direction.
Yeah.
Okay. You mentioned earlier you have kind of, like, a group of, like, queer parents. I guess, I know you live in the Bay Area, and so that culturally...
Stuff's weird out here.
Yeah. but... I guess, did you receive any pushback when people kind of, like, found out this is what you're doing, or when they find out that you're in a three-parent household? Like, what has that been like for you?
So, I think part of my decision to be in the Bay Area is tied to, like, me wanting to be in a place where I could build relationships with my family. Mm-hmm. I think, so that is also a piece of it. So the structure, I can give the like blow by blow of how our family came together in a bit, if that's relevant. But like, we're now in this place where I've legally adopted Toppy as a third parent. And the fact that I'm ace means that like whatever weird feelings people have about like polyness or like sexuality don't get projected onto us. So mm-hmm. we just get an overwhelmingly positive response where people mm-hmm. like, that's awesome. Because if they're a parent, they're like, I wish I had another person. so the fact that we've figured out how to do it with some people and not two, I think there's a lot of support of, and there's a few communities. There's communities that support queer parents. Like our family coalition, there's a group that a really good friend of mine started putting together called Alt Parenting. That's just a bunch of folks, not all of whom are queer, figuring out how to form families that don't look like a traditional romantic and sexual two-parent couple as the only parents. And it's a bunch of folks who are in couples, but they want to find someone else to have some relationship with, like some people who they're like looking for someone to exchange DNA with, who's mm-hmm. maybe a little bit involved but not fully involved. Some people who, like, they have their whatever their relationship intimacy life is, and they're looking to be co-parents with a couple, in a way that may or may not be intersecting with that. This is a bunch of people just kind of approaching it in different ways. And we've had a conference, we've had a few meetups, we've done a bunch of virtual stuff in the Bay. And I've kind of stepped in to try to help people, like after we navigated that, to try to help other people navigate that, which has been really fun. And there's a few other kids that are starting to happen in the group, and like some people who are integrating around existing kids. And it's been cool to hear the different stories that come out of it.
Yeah, that's great. Did you have any like legal issues? You said like you adopted her legally. Like, was that, did you have any hurdles with that, or was it fine for you?
We didn't have hurdles, but it was new. It was like, so the story is that for a long time in California, there've been all structure of family. There have been like, you know, genetic donors who want to be part of a kid's life. And so there were all of these like hacks to create trust funds that people could have been to that were governed together, or like to manage visitation or like or other stuff, but there wasn't a way to do legal parenting. And then not long ago, a law passed in California that made it legal to basically, you can be on a birth certificate if you are giving birth to a child, if you are genetically related to the child, or if you're genetically related to the child or married to someone who's genetically related to the child. So that allows for up to 4 people on a birth certificate.
Okay.
And then you can then do what we did. And in our case, my co-parents, Avery and Zeke, are married and also the 2 genetic contributors. So I like didn't have any standard to be on the birth certificate right away. But there's this other thing they wrote into the law, which is basically you go through the entire adoption process and they added a checkbox at the end that's like, I know we're putting this kid up for adoption, but we're also not giving up our parental rights. So you basically do everything that would happen in legal adoption, including a bunch of weird like social work and question stuff as if you were giving up the baby. And then at the end, you're like, and we're not. It's like, so we did that route. And that took about a year and a half after she was born, which is longer than normally takes, in part because we weren't the first one just to do it, but we're like, they hadn't done it a lot. Like they had to sort of figure out how the forms work. And but that was hilarious because there were a bunch of like, I had a social worker who had to come and like interview me and do all of the pre-adoption stuff. And they showed up in the process both as the parents, like the parents of the child being adopted and as the roommates of a person adopting a child. So they like had to get interviewed as my roommates, and they had to like get medical tests and stuff as my roommates, not as the...
That's funny.
That also sounds like, to me in my like just very anxious brain, I would be afraid of like, what if I didn't check that box and then I accidentally just like give up my child? Like, because you say like, oh, they like were going through the process of it as if they were going to give the child up for adoption, and then they're like, oh, psych, we're keeping. But what if they had accidentally just given up the child? That's just my irrational fears.
Then, you know, we'd probably, I don't know, we'd still like live together.
I mean, I'm sure it all would have been fine.
I would have
fine,
to give it up
like...
for adoption back to them. No, and it was good because like when they were filling out the form, and this is part of it, like there is a social worker who's there with them explaining everything to them, which I think is also what you do for regular adoptions, to be like, I want to make sure that you feel comfortable with da-da-da. So,
Well, my godfather, so he was single when he adopted his daughter. And then, like, he started dating his now husband when she was, like, 6 months old. And so now that they're married, like, they had to go through a whole process to get his husband also added as, like, you know, officially adopt the daughter. And I know that was a bit of a process. And I know when he was first adopting her, like, he had to talk a lot to like social workers and like the birth mother, and like there was a, he had to get approved and he had to like make a whole thing, and it's a process. It's definitely a process.
Yeah. It, and like, but that being said, it wasn't that bad. And like, I have a lot of privilege. I have class privilege. I have other sorts of privilege. So like, you know, there's sort of two sides of family law. There's like rich people family law, which is, mm-hmm. you know, managing divorces and stuff. And then there's like, or privileged people family law. And then like other family law that's much more the state like interjecting in people. And just that mechanism wasn't pointed at me, but could very well be pointed at a lot of ACE people and like a lot of otherwise legit awesome families. But yeah, like it was easy, like the social work stuff was easy for us. But yeah, it was smooth. It just took a while. And then I got to have an adoption party, which was great because I've never had a wedding. I'm probably never going to have a wedding. So this was like my equivalent, but I get to sort of make it up. There's no traditions for me to worry about. And that was fun.
Yeah, that's nice.
See, we always talk about Sarah having like a, what do we call it? Like,
cause an adult quinceañera.
And yeah, Sarah's going to have an adult quinceañera at some point because she's probably never going to have a wedding, but she wants a party.
I know. This is a thing. It was really fun to get the design from scratch. I'm just saying.
So, wonderful. Sarah, you have to start thinking about your adult quinceañera.
Okay, I'll do that. I'll start planning now.
Okay.
Do it for my 30th birthday. So we've got a couple years. Oh, man. You kind of mentioned this obliquely earlier about how kind of you became parents. I guess, can you give a smidge more detail just so the listeners can kind of understand, like, so you met this couple, you formed a bond with them, you decided that you wanted to have to co-parent. What was the next step from there?
So the step up to that, I met Avery at a conference, which is where I meet like all of my people at some sort of conference. I met Avery at a conference in 2010, and that was right around the time she started dating Zeke. And Avery and I hit it off. We like had all of these professional parallels in terms of what we cared about in the world. And we're like, we are going to be intentional coworkers. We're going to like hang out in the cafes together and just like work next to one another and then like talk about our stuff because there's all these cool parallels. And, I got to know both of them. After about a year, I had my first kind of ARO intentionality conversation with them. And then we just started doing a bunch of stuff together. Like Avery hired me at one point, Zeke invested in one of my company I started. Like we did a bunch of stuff. We like went on trips. We like did a bunch of stuff that built a lot of trust. And I knew that I really wanted kids, with a couple and was kind of interested in them as a possible place that might happen, but didn't feel comfortable asking them directly. So instead I just did a lot of hint dropping. Like I don't know what like romantic people do like pre-engagement, but like that kind of stuff.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then they got married and I played the role, not the officiant, but like leading up to their wedding, I was the person who met with them to help them like reflect on their relationship and how they wanted us to change. And then after they got married, I moved to New York. And I said, I want to be in a committed long distance relationship with you. So I want to fly back to San Francisco at least 3 times a year to see you. And they were like, that sounds great. And, you know, and have calls in between. And so during one of my trips back to San Francisco, they sat me down and said, we've been thinking, we really want to have a family. We really want you to be involved in a big way in that family. We don't know what that looks like, but we would love your help figuring that out. And that was like a really big moment for me, because as I mentioned, like a real long game. And I was like, oh my God, this is happening. And so I said, okay, there's this spectrum. On one end of the spectrum, like the baby's crying and I get the baby back. And the other end of the spectrum, I'm changing diapers at 3 a.m. Like I'm as close to an equal co-parent as we can get. And I said, you don't have to answer now, but like, give me a sense of where on the spectrum you want to talk. Because like, I could do the middle. Like if it's like, I'm around every other week, like I, you know, that would be exciting. I can work with that. Like I'm excited about the more intensive end of the spectrum, but I want to meet you where you're at. And so they reflected on it and they decided they were also more excited about the more intensive end. And then we set this norm of we're going to try to be as equal as possible. And we did a bunch of stuff. We like talked about our family's origin and what we wanted to reproduce. And we like talked about discipline and education and money and put together a whole big agreement document. Like we spent 2 years having a bunch of conversations, but the norm it came back to was, you know, there's times where we can't be equal, but we're going to try to be. Like we're going to try to figure out all the money, like kid family related expenses, and equally contribute to them. And we're going to figure out how to divide up the day so that one person is primarily on parenting duty and like that spreads around evenly. Mm-hmm. So when Tavi was first born, like Avery was the only one who could breastfeed, but Zeke and I split, like people would, she didn't have to get out of bed, and Zeke and I would like divide the night in half, and one person would get to sleep and the other person would like get up and help with whatever needed happening. And then once she could drink from a bottle, like Avery and Zeke would take over half the night and I would take over half the night. And now we divide, you know, evenly mornings, bedtimes, bath times. And that makes a really big difference, because I think there's, in a lot of families, you're sort of like everyone's always on by default. Mm-hmm. Like there's always the sense that you should be there, and knowing that there's times where like we all can be there and with the baby if we want to, but knowing that there's times where like it's okay for me to go and do more work, or work on a creative project, or make a time with a friend, and like I can not be present because I know that I'm going to be present later, and everyone else knows that, and there's no guilt. Like that has been really amazing for us.
Yeah, sorry, I can imagine.
The original question was.
No, you're good. Your response was better than my original question. I think the guilt factor really like stood out to me, like as you were saying, like, you know, I can go and leave and do this, and like I can imagine that a lot of other parents would feel a lot of guilt if they, you know, went to do these other things. I think especially like people who are socialized as women who are like mothers, and they're like, I can't leave my child alone, like, you know. And I think it's good and it's healthy to acknowledge that you have, you know, that your child is a big part of your life, but at the same time you have a life that you mm-hmm. don't have to be a parent 100% of the time in this kind of other section of your life.
Yeah, and I mean, so my co-mom, after Tavi was born, took up fire spinning, where she was like, this makes me really happy. It lets me have a better relationship with my body. Like, it's creative, it's expressive, it's all these things. It lets me show up in a better way as a parent and in general. And that meant that, like, she was going on Friday nights to do this thing. And, like, that was awesome because we, you know, one of us just made sure to have her on Friday nights. And I had Blue Sands that I like to do on Monday nights. And so I could have space to go do that. And being able to do the other things that put me in balance, and know that I was letting them do the same was really powerful. And it's also been amazing, I think, for their relationship and for my various ARO relationships. Like they get, before the pandemic, they got to go on dates. Now they like occasionally get to go on these little like COVID day weekend retreat things, but like they get space for the relationship. in a way that is really good for our family and that I think is feels more spacious.
Yeah. Just out of curiosity, you mentioned Avery as being a co-mom. What does your daughter refer to all of you as?
So Avery's mommy, Zeke is daddy, and I'm dada.
Okay.
Oh.
Yeah, because I'm always just curious about that. Because my godfather, like, he's daddy, and then his husband is papa. Like, you know, mm-hmm. different families, they have to come up with different different terminology.
We had some namespace conflicts because there's three sets of grandparents. Mm. So, like, Zeke's dad was already papa to his other granddaughter. Mm-hmm. And so, like, papa was taken. Like,
yeah.
there was some... but I daddy and dada works well.
I keep getting worried that, like, if I have kids with my current boyfriend, like, I keep... When I refer... So we have a cat together. And when I talk to the cat, I'm like, oh, that's your papa. Because I just think papa's, like, a funny word, even though that's what I call mm-hmm. my grandpa. And so I keep being worried that if I have kids with him one day, that's going to, like, turn into, like, his father name, which I don't necessarily want because that's what my grandpa is called. This is all very unrelated. But I'm just worried that I've already conditioned myself to what his father name would be. And
Kayla's just having a crisis.
I'm just having a crisis because my cat is my baby currently. So,
you know, it's never too early to freak out about parental namespace conflicts.
I mean, clearly.
Oh, incredible. Hard pivot. What do you think, like, more traditional parents or just people in general can learn from your experience in kind of like a three-parent household?
This has come up a lot in this group. And then there was this there's this Atlantic article that Angela Chen of Ace the Book fame mm-hmm. did that was awesome. So the big thing that I wish happened more, that I wish people would learn, is how to have intentional, committed conversations with people who are not primary parents about showing up in a kid's life. Because I think there are a ton of people out there who want more kid in their life, and there just isn't a way to create the rituals around it for it to, like, cut through modern life. Mm-hmm. And that's sort of what I, you know, what I found as a new parent, what I found to, like, showing up to my friends who are parents is if we get to the level of, like, okay, so every Tuesday, or like the first Tuesday of the month, or like at some level, in some way we don't need to negotiate, I'm just going to, like, be here unless there's some reason not to be. That having the inertia in that way makes a big difference compared to, like, if you have a kid, it's really hard to plan things because you don't know what their energy is going to be. You don't know where your energy is going to be. Having more people just make commitments like that to be showing up is a thing that I wish more people did. And then beyond that, I think because we haven't followed a traditional script, we've just been forced to be more intentional about everything. Like, we have a weekly family meeting where we figure out schedule, which not a lot of families do, but it's super useful to know ahead of time sort of what my parental responsibilities are and where I have free time. And it's really useful if there's something that's bugging someone to, like, have an official time in the week where we can sit down and talk about it and not put it on the person who's feeling frustrated to make the space for that conversation. Like, little things like that, I think, allow our communication to happen in better ways that I really like.
I also imagine that intentionality, even for, you know, parents who may be a heterosexual couple, like, having that sort of intentionality can help you kind of avoid just falling into gender stereotypes and just, like, you know, reinforcing that kind of stuff. I think that, like, that's also just really helpful regardless of the number of parents, the gender of parents, whatever, to have that intentionality so that you're kind of avoiding falling into the trap of just, like, gender norms doing what you've been brought up to think you should.
Yeah, and that, I think that's been the other thing, is having an explicit way to check in about who's doing what, and then like if check in if that's actually happening is mm-hmm. very helpful for breaking through that.
I feel like it's a kind of an interesting reflection on, like, I guess you kind of talked about like modern life, like working in kids into your life. It's, I think, kind of an interesting reflection of like what modern Western society looks like too. Like, I feel like you look at a lot of societies that aren't Western, and they are much more like family group oriented, where there's like mm-hmm. a whole group of people helping raise a child, or like everyone intentionally lives very close together, or like the grandparents are more involved in parenting the child, or like aunts and uncles are. And it's kind of like an interesting way to get back to a place like that, where I think just the way modernization is going, we're kind of getting further and further from that.
Yeah, I mean, this is its own whole ball of wax, but like the notion of a nuclear family, and the notion of I think from the books I've read when I was an undergrad studying this stuff, like the notion that you have two people together raising a kid and like that's the way it works has a lot more to do with the economic need to like constantly have people split up and following jobs than it does with like what's good for raising kids.
Yeah. Well, even Kayla, even as you were saying that, I was just thinking of like, I'm sure that part of that fragmentation has to do with the fact that we're an increasingly, because of the internet, but also because of whatever, like people are moving away from home more. People are they're able to live farther away from family and still be in contact with family, but not necessarily have those people there to help raise their children necessarily. And it's just kind of a different dynamic because of the way that, you know, I'm even thinking of my own family. Like, my dad was one of 8 kids, and 7 of the 8 kids stayed within driving distance of each other. Like, they were all there. But then now looking at my cousins, like, we're starting to split up. Like, I have, most of my cousins are in Michigan, but I have one who's going to be in Texas. I'm in Los Angeles. I have a cousin who's in Las Vegas. Like, we're splitting up, and it's kind of sad.
My family is the same way. I am used to like having every holiday like with my cousins, because mm-hmm. we all lived in Michigan, and now like we all live in different states. I've already moved like twice since graduating. Mm-hmm. Hello,
we have a guest.
You want to say hi?
Guest.
We're having a phone call, and they can ask you some questions, maybe, if you want to tell them some stuff.
Our youngest guest yet.
Let's see if I can figure out how to get this on speaker. What are you doing? You just wake up?
From rest time.
Oh, you had your rest time? Did you have a dream?
Rest time.
Well.
No, you didn't. But did you have a dream last night?
Mm-hmm.
What was it about?
Robot.
Oh, man. What kind of robot?
Robots in real life.
Oh, man, they were talking robots in real life in your dream?
Mm-hmm.
That's a good dream.
Oh, my gosh, that sounds crazy. Very exciting.
That's pretty crazy.
Yeah. Kavi, do you have any questions that you want to ask? Mm-hmm. It's a good to ask questions.
No.
No, you don't. You're just going to be screaming. Kavi, what is a song you like to sing? That's a good song.
That's beautiful.
Really good. It's
a silly song.
I like silly songs. I think they're good.
Kavi, I got another question. I don't know if you'll have an answer for this one. Right. What do you like to do with Daddy, and what do you like to do with Dada?
No.
You don't know?
Mm-mm.
That's okay. That's okay.
I want to go back.
Okay, you're going to go play? Okay, go play.
Bye, Tommy.
Our youngest guest, ladies and gentlemen, we've done it.
What a delight.
That reminds me, there's this one podcaster I like who sometimes he does like a short podcast with his oldest child who's like 5, and mm-hmm. they call it like the Charlie and Daddy Show, and they mm-hmm. just talk about like her favorite candy and stuff. It's very...
Oh,
it's very I feel like more we should have more children making content. Gotta
yeah
we gotta get them in this content game early. For monetize them soon.
Yeah, monetize the children early. No, yeah. For a second, I thought you meant that we should have more children on this podcast, and I was like, it's hard to have children on podcasts over Zoom, Kayla.
That's true. They'd probably get pretty bored.
Like,
yeah. She's been shy recently. Oh, usually she's very outgoing. But she just discovered Jenga, so she was kind of distracted. Ooh.
That's fair. I've seen a lot of things about, like, babies born in quarantine who aren't, like, properly socialized, and so now they're, like, starting to meet people and getting super freaked out because they aren't used to seeing, like, people outside of whoever lives in their house, and it just seems... I mean, I get stressed out by people, too, so...
Way to bring us stressful. Down by that, Kayla.
Sorry. It's just, like, you know, kids need to see people, I guess. I don't know how children work. I guess before we wrap up, for other asexual, aromantic, just kind of like A-spec people who are really interested in having a family or having kids in their life, what is your advice to people like that?
Oh, man. I would say it is very possible. There are way more people out there than I expected, way more allo people, way more like non-queer allo people who want to explore this idea. And so there are people out there who like want to explore all kinds, like aromantic parenting, like whatever. I think the thing for me was knowing enough that I wanted it, that I could start talking about it. Like when my friends were like talking about the relationships or gossiping, I would just like talk about this as a thing that I wanted, that I was trying to imagine. And being able to name it to other people, let them know that it was what I wanted, and let them help me find it long before I got to the point of actually having a conversation where I was like sitting down and seriously talking about it with someone. And so like practice being able to talk about it in a way that you feel comfortable with.
Manifest it into your life.
Yeah, like those books.
Oh, excellent. Okay. I know you also had another sort of unrelated, but it's all related on this podcast, thing you wanted to talk about. I'm just going to give you the floor and you can say what you will.
Cool. So another thing that has come up in the world is that there are some changes happening in the federal government of the United States. I don't know if anyone has noticed that.
What now? Not our federal government. Couldn't be us.
That means that there is a possibility, it might be slim, that the Equality Act, which deals with discrimination based on housing and employment, might be coming up for a vote. And if that happens, right now it includes a definition of sexual orientation that does not include ace or pan people. And there is some desire in pushing folks to include it. That might be really hard, but it is also possible. And one of the things that's really missing, like when people go to congressional offices to talk about this, is they don't have good stories of ace and pan discrimination. Like they don't have stories they can see and look at. So we're doing a little bit of an experiment. If you go to bit.ly/ace discrimination, A-C-E, and then the word discrimination, there will be a like jaunty little video survey where you can answer some questions and then record a video. Like if you have experienced discrimination, record a video of what that experience was like. And then we will follow up and check in with you. And if you give us permission, may include that video as a resource in educating nonprofits and elected officials about why ace discrimination is a thing they care about. We were going to focus on ace discrimination if you have stories of pan discrimination, you want to share those, then you're welcome to do that too. But we were trying to find pan people who could lead asking for those stories because that felt right.
Yeah, and I'll definitely include that link in the description of this episode so people can, and we'll tweet it out and everything, so people can get to that if they want to share their stories.
Awesome.
Great. I mean, not great that you have to do this, but
yeah, that's kind of shitty.
But the work's being done.
I mean, so other than that, kind of submitting those stories, are there other ways that people could get kind of involved in this initiative if they're kind of like really interested in helping push this forward?
There is a Discord group that's coming together, and I will give you all a link to that.
I think I might actually be in it.
You might be in it. Yeah.
Yeah, you're I might it? Be in it, but yeah, I think I might be, but I like am I'm not so like fancy. In it typically, but like I'm in it. But yeah, we should definitely get their permission before we just put it.
I don't know what you just said, but sure.
I'm in it, but like I don't spend a lot of time there because.
Oh, but you're not in it. Okay, I get it now.
Yeah. I don't know.
Okay.
You know.
Good. Yeah, we will post all the relevant links in the episode description. We'll tweet them out. We'll, you know. Cool.
Yeah. Okay. That's very exciting to get more asexuality just recognition, especially by like official government things, because then it's like, excuse me, we are real. Says, not that you need the government to tell you when you're real. That's kind of stupid, but
Joe Biden validated me.
Anyway, you know, it feels good. It's, you know, it is a big deal, even if it shouldn't be a big deal. Whatever.
Well, and like it's good to be able to make a case for why people should care about our experience.
Yeah
absolutely.
Is there anything else on the Equality Act you want to like plug or add? Any other like exciting projects you want to promote, anything like that? The existence of your child, that's a cool project, I guess.
She's great. I'm doing a bunch of stuff, but most of it's like my day job, not ace related.
Same.
I think I'm good. I'm really glad you all covered this topic. I'm really like, I run into at various times, like other ace parents, other aces exploring parenting, other aces who are like taking the steps. And I think it's really awesome. I think it's a really good thing for our community to be talking about, like on the full spectrum of like, how do we stop people who aren't having kids from getting shamed, to how do we support the people who are, to like, how do we support the people who want to have kids but not be like in their lives but not be legal parents. Like I think that whole conversation is important for our community, and also is a place where we can sort of push the normative world in a good way.
Yeah, I know we have at least one ace parent like in our Discord community. I'm sure there's others. I can only think of one.
I think there might be two.
Anyway, I don't know. Whether you're a parent already or just like want to be or anything, I'm very interested to hear like what everyone on like our community always has very interesting conversations after our episodes, because they're smarter than us. So I'm very excited to hear everyone's thoughts on this one especially.
Yeah, I also think, too, just, like, normalizing this discussion is helpful for people outside of the ASPEC community, in part because the ASPEC community is seen as so online and so young. And it's like, oh, it's just teenagers who, like, they don't know yet. And it's like, no, these are fully grown adults who have put thought into their lives and the fact that they're
raising
parents.
An entire child. Yeah,
they're raising a whole human being.
Terrifying.
Or sometimes more than one. Not for us, but
true.
You know.
Exactly. True. Exactly. Just a handful of human beings.
Wow, that's terrifying.
Yeah, that is a little.
I'm
terrifying.
Clearly not ready to be a parent. I can so imagine
fun,
that.
Fun fact. Part of the reason that she's named Octavia is that there is a tradition of Octavius in my name, because there's a tradition of having eight kids. Like my grandma was one of eight, my dad was one of eight, one of his siblings has eight.
Oh my god.
Several of those kids are on their way to eight, and I'm just like,
so are you gonna have eight? Is that what you're trying to tell us? You have seven more kids dropping soon. Release date TBD.
we started with Octavia, so we just like skipped to the end.
Mm, that's a good plan, to be honest.
It's a good hack. It's a good hack. Speed. Hey, gamers, this is how you speed run having 8 kids.
Oh, boy. Okay. great. Kayla, what's our poll for this week?
I don't know. What do we want to ask the people?
I don't know. The only question that came to mind just now was, do you have kids? Which is not a very productive poll.
It's not. It's not very exciting.
Maybe something on the spectrum of like, no, you don't want kids a little bit, like maybe not legal parents. Maybe you're like a one kid once a month, kid once a week, legal parent, like legal parent with many other parents, with just one solo, like there could be, you know, many desires out there.
Yeah. That's interesting. Let's do that. Cool. Okay. Kayla, I imagine that you're still typing that, so I will do... Oh, no, you're
I'm
not.
Actually not. So.
She's done.
Well, I'm going to... Well, I wrote, like, a small note for myself that I'm going to flesh out into a better tweet later, but that's...
Well, since you're not typing, I'm going to ask you, Kayla, what's your beef and your juice this week?
My juice is that I've lived in this house for, like, a full month now, and we just now got a coffee table, which I guess is kind of a beef that it took that long because it was getting incredibly...
wasn't your beef last week that you were using your couch as a coffee table?
I think it was because I was. but now we have a real table. So that was exciting. I guess that's a juice. We got a table today. Let's see. Beef is periods.
Yeah.
They're not fun.
Cancel them.
I started PMSing today and decided, my brain decided today was a good day to be depressed. And I was like, I actually had things I wanted to do today, but I guess I'll sit on the couch and cry to my boyfriend.
A classic move.
Sometimes you must. So that's, yeah.
Sometimes
being
you must.
Being a person with a uterus is actually the worst.
Terrible.
Yeah. Big news. I know no one knew that. Big news. I know that's breaking stuff, but yeah.
My beef, my juice. I didn't prepare any because, I mean, we last recorded like 2 days ago. Nothing has happened since then. My juice is that it's only 50 degrees today in Los Angeles.
Oh my God, is it warmer here than it is there?
It rained. What an absolute delight. I know that the rest
It's 59 for me.
Oh, my God. The rest of the folks in SoCal are like, oh, my God, it's cold. And I'm like, it's beautiful. my beef is that my car was very dusty, and I never get my car washed because why would I spend money on that when I could instead just drive around a dirty car? I don't care. I'm from Michigan. My car's always dirty. And I was like, it's raining. It'll wash off my car because, you know, I need to drive to the internet store today and stand in line for a long time. But then it didn't rain enough to fully like wash all the dust off my car. So now my car is just kind of like spotted, polka dotted, you know.
That's tragic.
It is tragic. David, what is your beef and your juice this week?
Oh, man. I guess we're leaving headlines out of it.
You can do whatever you want. We do big beefs.
It depends on the week.
Last week, my beef was capitalism. Like, you can do whatever you want.
What did capitalism ever not do to you? okay. My juice. This is really from 2 weeks ago, but I think I'm gonna count it. Tavi discovered a Mongolian metal band named the Who Band, which I recommend you check out, and is super, like, she's into metal and Magic School Bus right now in a big way. And I hadn't, like, realized how many metal emotions exist if you're three, but there's a lot. And she, like, feels they're being seen for the first time, and it's beautiful.
Oh, my God. She's like a tiny teenager.
That's amazing.
That's been great. And God, then
I get all my music recs from 3-year-olds for sure. Tavi should be making like a playlist. Here's my metal playlist for when you're feeling emo.
I have some music on the back in the background that I think is coming from a smart speaker or something. Let me turn it off.
Oh no. Hey, Google, stop. I can't hear it, but
So Juice is metal. My beef, I think this is more of an ongoing thing, is that my partner's in New York, my like Avo non-parent partner. And we haven't gotten to see each other in a year this week. And so I'm bummed about that. I don't know. We talk all the time, but I don't know when we could see each other again.
And that's how me and Sarah didn't see each other for
over a year.
Forever. And then we used to we were roommates for 4 years. So
we lived together. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then we saw each other for one day. And then you went back to Louisiana and I went back to California. And I won't see you again until
probably next year. But it's okay because you physically can't get away from me because
contractually obliged.
We have to be friends for the next 2 years contractually. So
yeah. Great. Okay. Well, you can answer our poll. Tell us about your beef, your juice, your experiences with Ace parenting on our social media at Sounds Fake Pod. David, where can they find you on social media?
I'm at DavidGLJ on Twitter. I'm on Facebook, but I'm not in it. And
you're in it, but like not in it, you know?
Yeah, yeah. And that's, you know, I'm like on the Avon board, so there's Avon, but I don't actually get to hang out on Avon that much. I kind of am mostly not on social media because my day job is about how social media is horrible. And it keeps me too busy to be on social media.
That's fair. See, for me, I just got a new job where my job is social media. So now I'm extra on social media. So, but I get paid to go on TikTok. So that's, I mean, I'm not mad about it at this point.
That's the dream.
I mean, yeah, kind of is.
Okay, wonderful. Yeah, find David. Find Avon. Don't find him at his house. Like, find him online. Avon's also an excellent resource. We also have Patreon, patreon.com/soundsfakepod. I'm going to throw it to Sarah in the future to read the patrons.
Thanks, Sarah from the past. It's always a delight. We have some new $2 patrons, and they are Megan O'Sullivan and Alana Bissinger. Thank you. You're lovely. I appreciate you both. Our $5 patrons are Jennifer Smart, Asrita Vinakota, Austin Lay, Perry Fierro, D. Quinn Pollock, Emily Collins, Book Marvel, Changing MX, Simona Simon, Jamie Jack, Jessica Shea, Rhea Faustino, Daniel Walker, Lily, nope, well, yes, Lily, but also Livy, both of them, Madeline Askew, James, Corinne, Alice is in Space, Sky Simpson, Brooke Siegel, Ashley W., Savannah Cozart, Harry Heston, Dugan, Soup, Amanda Kiker, Vishak, Jacob Weber, Rory, Amberly, Istar, Rachel, Kate Costello, John, Ariel Laxo, Ellie, Tessa, Matthias T., Chris Loretano, Sam, Kelly, Scott Ainsley, Orla Neve-Isley, and Julianne. You're all great. Our $10 patrons are Arknest, who'd like to promote The Trevor Project, Benjamin Ibarra, who'd like to promote Tabletop Games, Anonymous, who'd like to promote Halloween, Sarah McCoy, who'd like to promote Podcasts from Planet Weird, My Aunt Jeannie, who'd like to promote Christopher's Haven, Cassandra, who'd like to promote Manifesting Positivity, Doug Rice, who'd like to promote Native by Caitlin Curtis, Maggie Capelbo, who'd like to promote Their Dogs, Leia and Minnie, and also H. Valdez, who is our next patron. Purple Chickadee, who would like to promote Purple. Not gonna edit this. Purple Chickadee, who would like to promote figuring out one's gender identity and the non-binary community. Barefoot Backpacker, who still hasn't come up with anything, but I believe in you. Ashlyn Bodecker, who is Ashlyndo Everywhere. The Steve, who would like to promote Ecosia. R.E.K., who would like to promote The Eyeball Zone. Maddie, who would like to promote the Union series by T.H. Hernandez. Derek and Carissa, who would like to promote the overthrow of heteronormativity. Andrew Hillam, who would like to promote the work of Elle Rose, who is at Secret Lady Spider on Twitter. And thank them for their amazing support and friendship. That's very kind. Aaron, who would like to promote free forehead kisses, as always. And Kadir, who, I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, I believe that Kadir bumped up their patronage just to support the name of Fettuccini for Kayla's new cat. Now, we recorded this episode before Kayla got the cat, but Kayla has a new cat. The cat's name is Gnocchi Fettuccini, but Feta for short. And there was some discussion in the Discord about what the cat was going to be named, and Kadir felt very strongly about Fettuccine. And I believe that's why they upped their promotion. So, Kadir, do you want to continue promoting Fettuccine as a cat name? Do let us know. Nathaniel White. But we're on to our $15 patrons now. Guys, this is a mess. I'm really not editing it. Our $15 patrons are Nathaniel White, NathanielJWhiteDesigns.com, my mom Julie, who would like to promote Free Mama Hugs, Sarah Jones, who's at Eternal Lolly Everywhere, Andy A, who would like to promote Being in Unions and IWW, Martin Giselle, who would like to promote his podcast, Everyone Special and No One Is, Brandon Denton, who would like to promote Casa Q, Layla, who would like to promote Love is Love, also a applying to Arrow people. Shrubbery, who would like to promote the planet Earth. Dia Chappelle, who would like to promote their Twitch channel, twitch.tv/melodydia. And Dragonfly, who would like to promote the fact that we forgot to mention that our episode of Query with Cameron Esposito, Cameron's podcast, it came out and we forgot to say anything about it because we were so enamored by David J. So give that a listen if you haven't. Hear what it sounds like when our voices are properly mixed, when the audio is properly mixed. Anyone have any tips for dummies who have Adobe Audition on how to make our voices sound better? Let me know. I don't have a lot of skills. They need to be simple tips, guys. Anyway, cool. Thanks, bye. Back to Sarah in the past.
Thanks, Sarah from the past. This is me, Sarah from the future, doing the weather. Back to
Thanks.
You.
Thanks, Sarah from the future. I don't even have my thing pulled up because I'm not reading the patrons. Thank you so much for joining us, David. It has been a delight. Any last words for the kids at home?
However you want to have kids in your life or not is great. And you should take the time to name that with conviction and pride.
Hell yeah.
Good. Excellent. Kayla,
thank you for listening. Tune in next Sunday for more. Should we switch it this week? Should I say that?
Yeah, sure.
Do you think people would have an aneurysm?
Yeah, sure. Just mix it up.
Thank you for listening. Tune in next week. No, tune in next Sunday. Thank you for listening. Tune in next Sunday for more of us in your ears.
And until then, take good care of your cows.